Morning, today's daf in Shabbos Chav Ches. We are in the Mishnah Chav Zayin Amud Beis. We are starting today, continuing today in the Mishnayos, with a discussion regarding that which you can and cannot light with for Shabbos Lich. Second parak of the Masecht dedicated to the topic of preparation for Shabbos, and specifically that of making sure that there are lights on Friday night. We spoke extensively about the idea that lighting Shabbos Licht is for the purposes of Shalom Bayis and also a function of Kavod Shabbos and also a function of Onig Shabbos. And so the Mishnah continues to talk about what we can and cannot light with in terms of the lighting. So there are obviously two components to the lighting. There are the wicks and then there's the oil. So we already discussed oil at length. Now we're going to be discussing wicks, and specifically wicks that are made out of anything that comes from a tree. Kol Hayotzei Min HaEitz, the Mishnah starts off. Anything that comes from the tree ain madlikin bo. So you cannot use them as wicks. The wicks have to be something which is soft and absorbent. And so therefore, if it's a derivative of a tree, if it's directly coming off a tree, you're not allowed to use it. Ela pishtan. Notable exception is pishtan. So the flax is something which is soft and absorbent. And so therefore, that would be the only exception. And although the next halacha has nothing to do with Hilchos Shabbos, however, it has the exact same refrain, and so therefore it's included here in the Mishnah Shabbos, and that is to say that anything which is coming off of a tree and used as material is not going to be subject to Tumas Ohel, with notable exception to Pishtan. I'm going to come back to the second halacha in just a moment, explain it a lot better. In the meantime, however, let's go back to the first halacha of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that in terms of making wicks, so one is not allowed to make it from any tree derivative with notable exception to being Pishtan. Rashi over here, interesting Rashi. Rashi says that of the examples that one cannot use, which is tree derivative, tree based, so Rashi cites the example of cotton. Take a look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah, in Madlik and Bo. So Rashi says, Lasos psila mi canvas behen ohal hame, sorry, I skipped a line of Rashi. Lasos psila mi canvas, ubeged canvas, mitsemer gefen. So Rashi over here cites cotton as an example. Now, it's a strange example of Rashi in that, well, let's take a look at Tosos. Tosos over here cites the Rashi, and Tosos over here struggles in terms of understanding how Rashi is using cotton as an example. You see, Tosos divra maskal kol yotzei min ha'etz ein madlikin. Tosos writes, Perish bekunshus la'el, kigon bekanvas v'tzemer gefen, ve'nir l'Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi's grandson has a difficult time with this pshat. Dim ken ye asa lahadlik bo. You can't light with cotton. You can't use cotton as a wick. So Rabbeinu Tam says it goes against the minhag. Minhag is that we do use cotton for wicks, and it happens to be also excellent. So Tosfos over here makes a fundamental distinction between the yotzei min ha'etz that's described in our Mishnah versus seeds. Anything which is a seed, so that's something which would totally be fine. That's not what the Mishnah is disqualifying. The Mishnah's disqualification is the actual wood that comes off the tree. But any seed that comes out of the tree, so Tosfos says, that's not included in the Mishnah. And cotton, the way he views cotton, is basically it's a seed derivative of the plant, but it's not the actual plant itself. And Tosfos cites precedent for that. He quotes the Gemara Menachos. Anyway, so Tosfos does not accept Rashi's example as cotton as being an example of something that comes from a tree and would be banned. Just the opposite, says Tosfos. Cotton is a wonderful material, and the reason why it's not included in the Mishnah is because it's a seed, and the Mishnah is only banning the actual wood material that comes off of a tree. Next, we move on to the next case of the Mishnah, and the next case of the Mishnah talks about Tumas Ohel. So we've discussed Tumas Ohel already a number of times extensively, and we have an opportunity to do so again right now. So we know that when there is a mace, human remains, and you have a kezias of the mace and it's underneath a roof, so the halacha is as follows. The Tumas mace goes up to the roof, spreads out underneath the roof, drops back down again, and so therefore anything sharing under the same roof as the mace is going to be Tumay. And it's going to be an avatumma, that which is underneath the roof of the mace. With that halach in mind, just some basic principles. In terms of, generally speaking, a house, let's use a house as an example, as that would be a model example of something which would serve as an ohel. So a house is constructed out of brick or wood or whatever the case is. Generally speaking, when the house is grounded, it's connected to the ground, and so that means to say as follows. The house is a conductor of the Tumah, but the house itself is not going to be subject to Tumah. Meaning because now the house is a grounded entity, so it will allow the Tumah to go underneath the roof, but the house itself does not become an Avad Tumah. And so when the Mishnah says that Kol HaYotze Min HaEitz Einu Matamei Tumas Ohel, what it means to say is that generally speaking, the house itself is a grounded entity, and so therefore there is no requirement to be metahir the house, as the house itself does not become tamei. Although, again, it facilitates the tumah, it conducts the tumah, but it itself does not become tamei. However, Pishtan, notable exception. And if you look at Rashi over here, the two Rashis of the Mishnah, Einam Tamei Tumas Ohelim, Im Asam Em Ohel V'Hameis Tachtav Havikishar Bais, Ein Tzarech Lahat Belaha Ohel. So as I already got done explaining, but I got it from Rashi, obviously. There's no reason to immerse the house. Atzma delo kibol toma ela kelim shetachtav. Only the kelim that are underneath the roof of the house, but the house itself, no. Notable exception being Pishtan. Next Rashi, sha'af ohel tamei. So by Pishtan, we're going to have a really interesting phenomena. In that, not only is the roof made out of flax going to be a conductor of the tumah, but the roof made out of flax is also going to be mekabel tumah. And Rashi says, kidichli viza al ha'ohel. In fact, if you look in the Parsha in Chukos, when it describes being the process of the sprinkling of the solution of the paraduma, so it says that you're going to be sprinkling it al ha'ohel, on the tent. And truth of the matter is, if you think about it, what's the pasuk talking about? Meaning it's not talking about a regular house, because a regular house, as we just learned together, is grounded and not going to become tamei. So what are you sprinkling on an ohel? And now we know, after learning this Mishnah, it's talking about a roof constructed of linen. The roof constructed of linen, it itself is going to be tamei. And we'll see in the Gemara how the Gemara arrives at that conclusion. And we'll just add one other point to this Rashi, and that's the bottom Tosfos over here. Tosfos writes on the very bottom, the bottom Tosfos, second line down, Tosfos writes, Hacha Ayri B'Devar HaKavua. We're not just talking about a tent that was kind of like set up in the backyard, made up of linen. We can even be talking about where it was fixed into the ground. Tosfos says, Hacha Ayri B'Devar HaKavua, Shechibru LaKarka. Af Agav Shemitchila Haya Begin, Kevin Shechibru LaOhel, Bitlu Mitaros Begin, Ve'in Metame Ela Pishtan. When something is fixed into the ground, so again, you could say now that it's grounded, but what we're learning together is that if it's made out of pishtan, if it's made out of flax, so now it is not only going to be the conductor of tumah, but it itself is also going to be mekabel tumah. So Tosa says, even if our linen ohel is planted into the ground, planted, I don't mean that literally, but planted meaning inserted into the ground, it still is going to be mekabel tumah, and become subject to tumas ohel. Adkan, that takes us through the Mishnah. The Gemara first starts off the discussion. Minalan de pishtan nikrei eitz. How do I know that flax is called wood or called tree? Meaning the idea that we have to exclude pishtan from anything which is a yotze min haeitz. Well, how do I know that the pishtan plant is called an eitz? Maybe it's just simply referred to as some other designation, meaning why are we assuming that it's called an eitz? And so the Gemara says, because in Tanakh it's done so. Amar mazutra damar krova vihi halasam agaga, vitinam sam bepishtei ha'eitz. So we open up to the beginning of Navi, in the beginning of Sefer Yoshua. So the two meraglim are hidden by Rachav, and she puts them bepishtei ha'eitz. So you see that the Navi describes it as an eitz, and once a Navi does so, so that gives us license and definition in terms of describing the linen as being an eitz. Continuing in the Gemara, Vayosim and Eitzim and Tam Tumas Olam El Pishtan, Minalan Amar Rebbe Elazar, Gamar Ol Ol Mimishkan. And so now our discussion in the Gemara. What is the source? From where do we know that the Pishtan is in fact going to be subject to Tumas Ohel. So the Gemara says we learn it out from a Gzereshava Ohel Ohel. And we learn it regarding the Mishkan. Now over here, in order to understand the Gemara, so just a couple of reminders in terms of the construction of the Mishkan. Construction of the Mishkan, it had krashim. It had these very tall cedar planks. And on the top of these cedar planks, instead of having a fixed roof, so the Mishkan had coverings over it. How many coverings did the Mishkan have over? So, interestingly enough, the answer is not definitive. It ranges somewhere between the number 3 and the number 4. It's either going to be 3 coverings or 4 coverings. How could there be a discrepancy in terms of the number of coverings there are? Why don't we open up a Chumash and read in the Pesukim? So even after we do so, we're not going to go through the Pesukim right now, but even after we do so, there's still going to be a room for a little bit of ambiguity. The first covering over the Mishkan, so that's the Yiriyas HaMishkan, is made up of wool and linen. When I'm counting, by the way, I'm counting from the bottom going up. The first covering that's placed on is a covering made up of wool and linen. Second covering is the izim, the goat hair. A second covering made up of goat hair, plucked goat hair, is going to be covering number 2. Now, I'm going to assume right now that there are another 2 more coverings. The third covering is a lim adamim. They took the hide off of red rams and they put it as the third covering. And the fourth covering is the oros tichashim, the hides of the tachash animal. If the tachash animal is an animal you've never heard of before, so stay tuned because today's daf we're going to be discussing the tachash animal to the best of our ability. These, let's call them now 4 coverings of the Mishkan. So over here, we are going to be looking at the first of the coverings, which is made up of wool and linen. Ksiv Hacha, as we now turn to the top of Chavches Amad Aleph. Ksiv Hacha, it says over here, Zos Taras Adam Ki Yamus Be'ohel. So we see the word Ohel in conjunction with Thomas Mace. Uksiv Hasam, and it says, Vayifros Es HaOhel Al HaMishkan. And he, meaning Moshe, took the ohel and put it on top of the Mishkan. Mahalan shal pishtan kari ohel, afkan shal pishtan kari ohel. Now we know, as part of the composite of this first covering that's used in the Mishkan, it's made up of pishtan. So too, the definition of pishtan as it relates to the ohel of Tumas Meis is also going to be made up of pishtan. The Gemara says, okay, but now that we have the Gzeirah Shavah linking the two, so then, well, it happens to be that for the Ohel HaMishkan, its construction was extraordinarily precise. It was shizurin, it was woven, and each strand was made up of 6 substrands. And so you mean to tell me now that if that is serving as a definition of what is the Ohel for the Mishkan, so maybe then and only then would that serve as a definition in terms of being subject to Tumas HaMeis. So Tamalamar, Ohel, Ohel, Riba. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if you go back to Parshas Chukas, you're going to see the word Ohel is repeated multiple times, and that serves as a ribui. It's broadening, and it's including even linen that is not made in the exact same composite as it was regarding the Mishkan. E Ohel, Ohel, Riba, Afilo Kol Milan Nami. So the Gemara says, well, once we have a ribui, so why don't we include other materials as well? Im ken gzeirah shavah maya hanile. But the Gemara counters, and the Gemara says, yeah, but then we don't have a gzeirah shavah anymore. Meaning the gzeirah shavah has got to make a singular point, which is it's going to define which materials we're talking about. But then the ribui is going to be expansive in the fact that by the Mishkan, the construction and the way the linen was put together was very particular. But for Tumas Ohel Meis, it doesn't have to be that particular. Ve'ema malahalan krashim afkan krashim. Now the Gemara says, okay, but if it's the Gzeirah Shavah that is establishing what an Ohel is, well, you know that by the Mishkan, so not only was the covering, but there was also the krashim, there were the beams. Now Rashi over here seems to suggest that what the Gemara is suggesting right now is that we should say that Eitz also is called an Ohel. Meaning, since wood is used as part of the beams of the Ohel, so we see that now the material of wood was, in fact, used for the Mishkan of the Ohel. And so, therefore, why don't we say that for Tumas Meis, So if the ohel is made up of wood, so that too should be susceptible to tumas mace and tumas ohel. And again, not just simply be a conductor of the tumah, but also be mekabel tumah as well. Now that's the way Rashi seems to present the Gemara, and that is a little bit difficult, and Tosfos makes this point. And you can see the Tosfos over here, ima lahalan krashin, where Tosfos makes basically this point. And that is, the way Rashi presents it, it's a little bit strange. The krashim are not the horizontal covering. The krashim are the vertical walls that make up the Mishkan. And the Gemara over here is even just suggesting that we're looking at the krashim as part of the ohel material. It's just simply the walls that hold up the ohel, but it's not the ohel itself. So Tosfos therefore gives a different shot in the Gemara over here. See Tosfos for that. Anyway, we're going to continue in the Gemara. Amar kra v'asisa krashim lamishkan. So mishkan kari mishkan ve'in krashim kari mishkan. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if I'm reading the psukim in Parshas Truma carefully, it says that you're making the krashim for the mishkan, meaning that the very definition and the essential definition of the mishkan is going to be the roof that goes over the krashim, meaning the coverings that we're describing. Mishkan is referred to as mishkan, and the krashim themselves are not making reference to the mishkan. So elameata ve'asisa michsei le'ohel. So the Gemara says, okay, but even at now, as we are trying to pinpoint exactly what, when the Torah describes the ohel of the mishkan, what exactly is the ohel? So you mean to tell me now that when we're taking our second, third, and fourth covering, the Torah says that you're making a michsei le'ohel. It's a covering for the ohel. Now the ohel over here, we're assuming is to be the first layer. That's the wool and linen covering that goes on top of the mishkan. And it sounds like anything above that is not referred to as the ohel, but rather the michsei le'ohel. It's the covering of the ohel. So hachinami michsei lo ikrei ohel. And you mean to tell me that this michsei is not considered part and parcel of the ohel? And the Gemara says, Ela hadabai Rebbe Lazar, or behema tamea, maushi tame ba'ohel hames. And the question that we're going to be asking, well, we're asking it now, but we're going to delve into it, is that the hide of a non-kosher animal, is it eligible, is it subject to tumas ohel mace? Hashta or behema tahora lamatame, or behema tamea mibaye? Now, if we're going to argue, which we're trying to argue right now, that the coverings that go on top of the first covering of the Mishkan, and right now we're focusing on the hides of the rams, the hides of the tachash. If in fact what we're saying is that that's not part of the ohel, that's the michsei le'ohel, it's the covering of the ohel. And so therefore we're banning and we're excluding that from the definition of the Mishkan, that means to say that we're also going to be excluding that from anything being subject to Tumas Ohel Hames. So the Gemara says, so the question that we're asking, or we're going to propose, that we're going to delve into, is that the hides of non-kosher animals, and whether or not they are going to be subject to Tumas Ohel Hames, I don't understand. If a hide of a kosher animal is not even in the discussion, if that's off the table, so then the hide of non-kosher animal for sure is going to be off the table. So the Gemara says, Hasam dahada ahadri kra. So the Gemara says, no. When it comes to the coverings that are on the Mishkan, every covering is considered part and parcel of the ohel. And the Gemara basically acknowledges, I know earlier we said it's michsei le'ohel. And I know that was a little bit confusing, but the Gemara says, but if you read on in the psukim, we will be less confused. Dichsiv, the pasuk says, v'nas'u es yireos ha-mishkan. The Torah says, in terms of the transportation of the coverings, that the Levim are going to be carrying them. And basically, when talking about transporting the coverings, all the coverings are listed together. And the Gemara makes exactly this point. Mekish elyon latachton, matachton kari ohel, af elyon kari ohel. Every one of the coverings is part and parcel of the ohel in terms of transportation. And now in terms of construction, we're going to say the same thing. Every one of the coverings is considered the ohel. So the first layer, which is made up of wool linen, that's a covering. Second layer made up of goat hair is also a covering. And the third and fourth layer made up of the hides of the animals. So that also is going to be considered a covering as well. And so therefore, we are now comfortable in saying that all four of the coverings are in fact going to be considered qualify as an ohel. And it happens to be that now that goes all the way back to our Mishnah, when our Mishnah says that anything which is eitz is not going to be considered subject to Tumas Ohel, and again, just for purposes of clarification, that means to say that a wood making a roof is going to be a conductor of Tumas Mace, but it won't be Mekabel Tumas Mace. It is the linen, which is called eitz, is the notable exception where not only is it a conductor of Tumas Mace, but it also will be Mekabel Tumas Mace. And now we're saying is that that's true for all four coverings. It's true for the first covering of one linen. It's true also for the covering of the goat hair. And it's true for the two coverings of the hides. The hides of the rams and the hides of the tachash. Okay. With all that stated now, we are going to go back to the question and now delve into the question. Question on the table is that if I have the hide of a non-kosher animal, is that too going to be subject to Tumas Mace? Gufa. By Rebbe Lazar or Behemoth Tamei Amaushi Tami Tumas Oalim. My Kami Baile, the Gemara wants clarification. What exactly is at the source of the question? Amravacha Amarav Ada Ba'ava Tachash Ayabi Me Moshe Kimi Baile Tame Haya Utaor Haya. The question over here is an extraordinarily straightforward question. We know exactly what the coverings were that were on top of the Mishkan, but we do not know the identity of what that Tachash animal is. The fourth covering, as we've gone over now, is a roast tichashim. It's the hide of the tachash animal. And being that that's such a bizarre animal, it is an animal that we're not sure what it is. So the first question we're going to ask is a really simple one. Is it of a kosher species or a non-kosher species? So, Amar Rav Yosef Maiti Baile, Tanina. So Rav Yosef says, I don't understand the question. Meaning, I have the following tradition as a braisa. Anything that's used for the purposes of Melecha Shamayim. Now that's a term that we're going to explain better over the course of today's daf. But if I'm using an item, a material for Melecha Shamayim, it only comes from Or Behema Tahora, the hide of a kosher animal. So this is a tradition that Rav Yosef says. So obviously we're using the hide of the Tachash. We're using it as a roof, as the tenting for the Mishkan. It's fair to suggest that the Mishkan itself is Melecha Shamayim, and so therefore, its deductively sound argument is that the Tachash is made up of a kosher animal. The Tachash is a kosher animal. So Mezer Rabbi Abba, says, well, we have the following Braisa. And here in this Braisa, we're going to introduce ourselves to the idea that we are not sure as to whether or not the last covering on the top is two separate coverings, like I've been describing it up until now this morning, or maybe really it's a composite of one covering. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shnei Mechzaos Hayu Echad Shel Aros Eilim Me'adamim Ve'Echad Shel Aros Techashim. Rabbi Yehuda presents that the top two coverings of the Mishkan, one is made up of Eilim Me'adamim, the red hides of rams, and the one on top of it is made up of Oros Techashim, the hide of this Tachash animal. But they're two separate coverings. Reb Nechemya Omer Mechsei Echad Haya V'doma Kamo Kemin Tala Ilan. Reb Nechemya says, actually, it's not two coverings. It's one covering. It's a composite. It's made up of both. Both the red rams and the hide that comes off of the Tachash. And the composite looks like a Tala Ilan. It looks like the hide of a Tala Ilan. Now, it's fair to say that we don't know what the Tala Ilan is. However, it is a non-kosher wild animal. Rashi describes Chaya Temeahi Uminumeris Begevanim. And it was spotted and it was made up of many different shades and many different colors. So now the Gemara points out, by Reb Nechemya comparing the composite covering to the hide of a Tala Ilan, V'ha Tala Ilan Tamehu. It's a non-kosher animal. And so aren't we therefore saying by extension that the Chaya itself, the Tachash itself, is a non-kosher animal? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Hachi kamar. Kimin tala ilan hi sheyesh bo gvanim harbe, velo tala ilan, deilu hasam tame, v'hacha tahor. The Gemara just simply says, look, it's just a descriptive comparison. We're not saying that the Tachash is exactly like the tala ilan. We're just simply saying that in terms of its description, it's colorful, just like the hide of the tala ilan. But in terms of what it is, the Tala Ilan is a non-kosher animal, and the Tachash is a kosher animal. So the Gemara says, the comparison was just there for the purposes of description of the height. I'm Rav Yosef Ihachi Hainu de Metargaminan. Now Rav Yosef says, oh, good, now I know Targum. And how many times in this Masechta alone have we gone through Rav Yosef's Targum? And Rav Yosef says, now I understand Targum. Because if you look at the Targum on the word Tachash, the Targum describes it as Sazguna. Now for us non-Aramaic speakers, so we don't get this excited when we hear Targum. Sazguna to us doesn't mean anything. Okay. But Sazguna, now Rav Yosef is explaining Targum, and he says the word Sazguna, Shesas Bigvanim Harbe, that it is rejoicing in its many different colors. Meaning this particular animal is an extraordinarily colorful animal, and it is most happy with the number of colors that it has. An interesting Targum. Anyway, but Rav Yosef's point is that if we were describing something which was non-kosher in nature, so the Torah would have given a more proper identification of what the Tachash is. By virtue of the fact that the Torah, the Targum, gives a more descriptive term in describing the Tachash, so it speaks to the idea that it could very well be a kosher animal, and over here the Targum is just simply highlighting the fact that it's multicolored. Rava Amar Or Behema Tamea Demetame Ba'ol Hameis Mehacha. Okay, so Rava now is going to be addressing the very same question that we've been discussing up until now, but he's going to come at it from a totally different source. Again, the question on the table is as follows. If we have a tent that's made up of a hide of non-kosher animals, is that going to be subject to Tumas Ohel? Up until now, the platform that we've been using to try to answer the question has been the model of the Mishkan, because we have the Gzeirah Shavah, and we know that the halachas of the Mishkan are going to help us in terms of defining what an OL is vis-a-vis Tumas Meis. However, where we basically ran into a dead end is that we thought maybe the Tachash is a non-kosher animal, and that would shed light on our question, but we've concluded up until now that the Tachash is most probably a kosher animal, and so therefore it doesn't shed any light on our topic. Rava now is going to reopen the case, but he's going to go to a totally different source. Rava Amar Or Behema Tamea Demetame Ba'ol Hameis, Mehacha. The idea that the hide that comes from a non-kosher animal, but it's serving as now a tent, and the idea that it's going to be subject to Tumas Ohel Hameis, so it's derived from the following. Ditanya, we learned on a Braisa, or, so when describing the susceptibility of Tumah, so the Torah talks about the materials of or. Now or over here is the hide. And we are describing over here Tumas Nigaim specifically. And it says O Be'or. And we have the additional word O, which is a ribui. So O Be'or Riba, Or Behema Tamea, I'm sorry, Or O Be'or Riba Or Behema Tamea. And it comes to tell me that what is going to be subject to Tumas Nega, it's going to be not only the hide of kosher animal, but the ribui is there to extend and include even the hide of non-kosher animals. Vishalaka b'yad kohen. And on top of that, another halacha. Let's say you hand over your garment to a kohen to take a look at. It happens to be that when you handed it to him, the tsaras did not materialize as of yet. And after you handed it to him, now the tsaras takes form on the beged. One would have possibly thought that because it wasn't handed to him already with the condition of tsaras, maybe then he does not have the right to declare to be tsaras. So the halacha over here is that even though the tsaras takes form after it was handed to him, nevertheless the kohen still is going to render this a source of tuma. This is going to be a tsaras spot. Katsus mikulam va'asa achas mehen. Well, let's say I take all the various materials that are described in the Torah, and I make some sort of garment from a composite of all the different materials. Minayin, how do I know that in all these cases, it's going to be subject to Tumas Negayim? Tamalamar, oh, Bechol Meleches, or any Meleches, or. Okay, so we have a number of halachas. Obviously, the halacha that we're interested in for our discussion is the idea that even if the hide comes from a non-kosher animal, so then it's going to be subject to Tumah. But right now, Ikal HaMifrach, the Gemara says, okay, but you haven't addressed our question, because we want to know if the hide of non-kosher animal is going to be subject to Tumas Ohel. The drasha that you quoted is very good, but that's talking about Negayim. And Ikal HaMifrach, and you want to say that we could just simply learn one source of Tumah from another source of Tumah, but you know we can't. When it comes to Tzara'as, we have the special Chumra, that even the spools of the vertical threads and the horizontal threads are going to be subject to Tumas Negayim, a halacha that does not extend to other areas of Tumah. So Elagamar Mishratzim. So the Gemara says, okay, but we do have another source when it comes to Tumas Sheretz, and we're going to go basically through the same types of drashas, the Tanya we learned on a Braisa, or when the Torah introduces us to Tumas Sheretz, the Torah also uses the word or, Ein Le'ela or Behema Tahora. So far, all I know is if it's the hide that comes off of a kosher animal, or Behema Tamei Minayin. How do I know that if it's the hide of a non-kosher animal? Tamalomer, oh, or. So we have, again, the ribuy over there. Ikal Amifrach. Again, the Gemara says, yeah, but you can challenge. Ma'la Shratzim Shekema Tamei Becha Adasha. Again, a specific chumra that we have regarding Tumas Sheretz, and that is that I don't need much of the Sheretz remains. All I need is just simply the size of a lentil of a Sheretz, and that will be an Avatuma. So Negaim Yochichu. So the Gemara says, okay, so we have a source regarding Negaim, and I have a source regarding Shratzim. So here the Gemara launches into its classic discussion of use the common denominator. V'chazer Hadin. Lori Zekeri Zev, Lori Zekeri Zev. It's an acknowledgement that they're not exactly the same, but Hatzad HaShavash Emehem, but the common denominator, She'or Tameh Behem, V'asa Or Behem Tameh, Or Behem Torah. Af Ani Avi Oval Ames, She'or Tameh Behem, Venasebo or Behema Tamek or Behema Tahara. So I have now the source for Sheretz. I have the source for Negayim. And I now, in both of those Tumas, have learned that not only is the material of hides going to be subject to the Tumah, but even non-kosher hides are going to be subject. And so now I could take the two, use the common denominator between the two, and include even Tumas Hameis. So Amalei Rava mi Barnesh la Rav Ashi ikal mifrach. Even as we're using the common denominator, it's still not going to get us to the point of Tumas Meis. Why not? Mala atzad haShavash Behem shekem etamim bepachos mi kezayis. Tomer b'meis she'enem etamim ela bekezayis. Still, when it comes to the Tumah of Negayim, and it comes to the Tumah of Shratzim, even if I have less than a kezayis, it is still going to be an avatumah. By Negayim, it's the size of a gris. By Sheretz, it's the size of an adasha. But when it comes to Tumas Meis, you need a full kezayis of mace in order for there to be a transmission of Tumah. And so therefore, each one of them present a kula that you don't have by Tumas Meis. So I can't extend it to Tumas Meis. Elama Rava mi Barnesha. Now as we turn to the Amud Beis, finally the Gemara is going to give a different source, Asya b'kava chomer. So we'll learn it based on a kava chomer from notes of Shul Izim. The kava chomer will start off with the goat hair, right? It's called notzeh. Notzeh literally means the feathers, but because the goat hair is plucked off of the goat, much like the feathers are plucked off of a bird. So that's why it's described as notzeh Shul Izim, the goat hair. Shema tamim b'negayim. Now, goat hair is not going to be subject to Tumas Negayim. As we already learned, Tumas Negayim, we spent the last couple of days discussing this extensively, only is for wool and linen, and it doesn't apply to goat hair. And she'ein metameh b'tumas negayim, metameh b'ol hameis, and yet goat hair is going to be subject to tumas ol hameis. It is one of the coverings of the Mishkan, or behema, metameh or behema tameya she'metameh b'negayim, einu din she'metameh b'ol hameis. So now, if I have the hide of non-kosher animal, which is in fact subject to Tumas Negayim, so for sure it should apply to Tumas Oel Ames as well. So that Kavachomer will allow us to conclude that the hide of non-kosher animals is in fact going to be subject to Tumas Ames. So, with all that stated now, what conclusion have we have just arrived at? That when it comes to Tumas Ames, so if it is the hide of either kosher or non-kosher animals, so then it is going to be subject to Tumas Ol Hameis. Now, Elahadni Rav Yosef, let's go back to a statement that was made by Rav Yosef earlier in the daf, and let's see if we can understand it now. Lo hukshuru mamalecha shamayim ela or behema Torah belvad. That as far as anything that's used for the purposes of malecha shamayim, right, literally the work of heaven, so you're only allowed to use the hides of kosher animals. Lamai hilchasa. Now, what is it there to inform us? What exactly are we learning from the seemingly very basic rule of Rav Yosef? It's a brisa that was quoted by Rav Yosef. Now, in terms of dictating what is going to be used on the top of the Mishkan, so as we already got just got done concluding, it doesn't inform us regarding Tumas Ohel, because we already now know the halachas regarding Tumas Ohel. We learned it from totally different sources. We didn't use it from the source of the hide that was on the top of the Mishkan. So legabe, vis-a-vis what halachas now are we saying that for Melech HaShemayim I have to only use the hides of a kosher animal? So the Gemara goes on to explain Lamai Hilchasa, Litfilin. So the Gemara says that we're learning it vis-a-vis the halachas of Tfilin. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Tfilin behejiksiv, behu. Lamanti etaros Hashem beficha. Minamotu beficha. We know, based on the psukim at the end of Parshas Bo, that when you're writing your tfilin on a cloth, the cloth is coming off of the hide of a kosher animal. How do I know that? Because it says, Lamanti etaros Hashem beficha. Now the literal translation of the pasuk, of course, is that we have to be saying these words. But also, on the level of drasha, we're saying that it has to come from an animal that we could put in our mouth, meaning it has to come from a kosher animal. So the Gemara says, fine. So the cloth in which I write the parshios of the tefillin have to come from a kosher animal. And I know that from the drasha. And I don't need the brisa of Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says, ela la'oran. Well, the Gemara says, well, what about the batim? When making the batim that encase the klapim, that encase the parchments, so maybe I need the brisa of Rav Yosef. The Gemara says, I don't need the brisa of Rav Yosef. V'amar Abaye shen shel tefillin halacha l'moshe misinai. We know that on the shel rosh, so we're etching a shin on the two sides of the shel rosh. And the shin that is on the two sides of the shel rosh, it's part of Shem Hashem. And as a result of that, so we see that this is also considered like the klapim, just like the cloth where we have a drasha in Parsha's bow, that it has to be coming from a kosher animal. So if we're writing the shin on the shel rosh, so that too also is generated from the same source. And so now, once again, the question is, what do I need the brisa of Rav Yosef coming to teach me? In other words, I don't need it for the shin of the shel rosh. Now, over here, you could ask the question, and not only could you, Rabbi Kiva Eger does, and that is, that only gets me the shin of the shel rosh. What do we say about the shel yad? There is no letter that's written on the shel, on the bottom of the shel yad. Okay. See Rabbi Kiva Eger, although I just shared it with you, and happens to be that he does not here on the daf offer an answer. But anyway, Ella lekorchan b'sara anulatofra migidin. So the Gemara says, well, maybe in terms of when we stitch up the tefillin, they must be stitched up using the material of the animal. And maybe for this we need the brisa of Rav Yosef to teach me that the stitching is got to come from an animal which is kosher. So the Gemara says, Hanami halacha l'moshe misinai hu detanya tefillin merubaos. Halacha l'moshe misinai. Nikrachos b'sa'aran v'nitfaros b'gidin. So the... as far as the fact that the tefillin have to be square, and the fact that they have to be stitched together with the hairs and the sinews of an animal, that's also part and parcel of the halacha l'moshe misinai. And once again, I don't need Rav Yosef to teach me this particular halacha, as we've already just learned it from halacha l'moshe misinai. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about the straps. The hamar of Yitzchak ritzua shechoros halacha l'moshe misinai. So the Gemara says the fact that the straps have to be black, that's part and parcel of the halacha l'moshe misinai. And again, the Gemara is trying to push back and say, look, I know that the straps have to come from a kosher animal, but I don't need the brisa of Rav Yosef. That's just simply part and parcel of the halacha l'moshe misinai. And the Gemara finally deflects, nihi de gemiri shecharos, taharos mi gemiri. So the Gemara says, look, the fact that the tefillin straps have to be black, that's part of halacha l'moshe misinai. But the fact that it has to come from a kosher animal, so that does not necessarily come from halacha l'moshe misinai. And maybe for that particular halacha, we could say that we have the brisa of Rav Yosef teaching us that it must come from a kosher animal. With all that stated, so we have so far concluded the following this morning. Extensively, we've covered now the topic of what serves as an ohel that not only is going to be conductor of Tumas Mace, but also is going to be Mekabel Tumas Mace. And we said that linen, when used as a covering, as an ohel, is going to be Mekabel Tumas Mace, and we know that from the Mishkan. Once we got onto the topic of the Mishkan, we explored a number of other topics that are seemingly associated with the Mishkan. And one of the things that we introduced ourselves this morning is the idea that the fourth covering of the Mishkan, or it could be the third covering of the Mishkan, and it's just simply a composite with the Elima Adamim, but either way, as part of the fourth covering of the Mishkan, we're using the hide of the Tachash. Now, is the Tachash a kosher or non-kosher animal? So on the Amud Aleph, we discussed it, but we didn't really arrive at a conclusion. And what the Gemara wants to do now is back ourselves into that conversation and see if we can get more clarity on this issue. So, my havila de tachash haya bimei Moshe. So, can we try to get a little more clarity and conclusion regarding the tachash that was used in the time of Moshe? Amar Rabbi La, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Omer haya Rabbi Meir, tachash haya bimei Moshe, birya bifnei atzma haya. So, the Gemara now has a tradition going back to Rabbi Meir. And that is that the tachash that was used by Moshe Rabbeinu was a species that was one of its kind. V'lo hichriu ba chachamim im minchayahu im min behemahu. And the chachamim want to try to put it into a category of a behemah rechaya, and they were unsuccessful in doing so. They didn't know which of these two categories it belongs to. We've covered this many times in Chulin. We discussed this extensively. Basically, in the animal kingdom, as far as the Chachmei Yisrael are concerned, so there are two divisions of where to put the large animals. Either belongs in Behemah or belongs in Chaya. As a loose definition, Behemah is basically a domesticated animal. A Chaya is a wild animal. As a loose definition of what the differences are, halachically, there are a couple of very basic differences between a Behemah and Chaya. Before the differences, the similarities. In terms of Simani Kashrus, so chewing the cud, split hooves, so those are the simanei kashrus for both by chaya and by behema. In terms of basic distinctions in halacha, so the chaylev of a behema is aser midaraisa with an issur kares, and the chaylev of a chaya is mutar lagamrei. In terms of karbanos are only eligible to be brought from a behema. A karban is not eligible to be brought from a chaya. Okay, and there are other differences as well, mitzvah of kisu adam. Okay, anyway, so this tachash, which was a one-of-a-kind animal, so Chachmei Yisrael did not know whether it fell under the category of a behema or that of a chaya. Vekeren achas haisalo, back to the Gemara, it had one horn on it, bim mitzcho, right in the center of its forehead, ulefisha nizdamin lo lamoshe, and it was presented to Moshe in the Midbar, when we needed the Or HaTachash to use as a covering for the Mishkan. So at that point in time, it was presented to Moshe. V'asa mimenu Mishkan v'nignas. And then after that, it was stored away. Midikamar keren achas haisalo b'mitzcho shma minatarhu. So the Gemara now wants to make the following deduction. The fact that it had a single horn in its forehead, so that indicates that it is an animal which is tar. Now how do we get to this deduction? Because we do have another tradition, and that is Adam Rishon offered a similar type animal. He offered a animal with a single horn in its head. And Shenemar, and we know this based on the pasuk in Tehillim. Vatitav Hashem Mishor Par Makrin Mafris. And he pleased HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he offered the shor par, which was makrin umafris. Now, mafris certainly speaks to the idea that it had split hooves. Now, makrin, we're going to understand, means that it had a horn. Now, makrin tarti mashma. Now, the Gemara says, now, it has the yud, and that yud would indicate that it is the plural. So, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak makren ksiv. It doesn't write it with the yud. We pronounce it as if it had a yud in it, but in terms of the ksiv, it's written without a yud. And so, therefore, as a result of that, it is going to assume that it's a kosher animal. I'm sorry. We're first going to assume that it therefore had one horn. And by virtue of the fact that Adam Arishon offered it, so that now tells us that it was a kosher animal. Because the Gemara is operating with the assumption that you cannot offer as a carbon even Adam Arishon before there were Hilchos Kashrus. But you cannot, and by the way, we see this by Noach, that before there was Hilchos Kashrus, there was an understanding of what was a kosher and non-kosher animal vis-a-vis karbanos. So if Adam Arishon is offering it as a carbon, so by definition, it has to be of a species which you and I would call a kosher animal. The Gemara says, "V'lifsha minei demin behemahu." So the Gemara says, "Okay, so but at the same time, now we've established that it's a kosher animal. Can't we also establish that it's a behema? Meaning, by virtue of the fact that it is being offered as a carbon, and one of the definitional points of a behema is that only a behema can be offered as a carbon." So can't we assume now that the tachash is in fact going to be a behema? So the Gemara says, "Kevin deika kerish demin chayahu v'leisle ela chad keren iklamemer min chayahu." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but there are in fact other animals that exhibit this one horn, and we know that they are a chaya. So it could be that this tachash under discussion could in fact fall under the category of a chaya, not necessarily a behema." Okay, so with all said and done, so we are given only the smallest clues and snippets in terms of what the tachash animal is. So for me to declaratively say what exactly the tachash is would be foolish. I'm not going to attempt to do so. But in the very least, however, we do know that it was an animal, one of a kind, presented to Moshe on the needed basis, in order to construct the Mishkan. As part of the instruction of the construction of the Mishkan, we needed the Or HaTachash, and in terms of whether it's a Chai or Behema, seems like it's a Behema, but the Gemara is not concluding on that. In terms of whether it's a kosher animal or non-kosher animal, the Gemara wants to deduce that it is kosher, because Adam Arishon gave an animal, offered an animal similar to that as a Karban, so it could very well be that it comes that the Tachash that we're describing is also going to be kosher animal. So these seem to be the conclusions of the Gemara in terms of the small window we're given into what this tachash animal is. In terms of its covering as a Mishkan, so let's just recap also that in terms of when it was used as a covering for the Mishkan, so we saw two options today. Either it was a totally separate covering that was made from the hides of the tachash that was put as the fourth layer on the top of the Mishkan above the hides of the Elime Adamim. Or the other possibility, and this was the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah, is that they took the hides of the red rams and the hides of the tachash, they made one composite sheet of the two, and that was the third covering of the Mishkan. The third and, according to Rabbi Nechemiah, final covering of the Mishkan. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first sugya of today's daf, and we continue. We're starting now in the Mishnah on the middle of Chav Chesam and Beis. The Mishnah starts off, Psilas HaBeged Shekipla. Let's say I have a fabric, a piece of fabric, and what we do is we fold it over. However, before Shabbos, what we did not do is we didn't singe it. And so when you want to make a wick that is easy to use, so you want to singe the end. But we didn't singe it as of yet. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Tamehiva in Malikimba. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that it's still a kli, and you cannot use it to light with it on Shabbos. And Rabbi Kiva Omer Tahorihi Uman Likin Ba. And Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that it is Tahora, it's no longer a Kli, and you can light with it on Shabbos. There is much to discuss over here in this Mishnah, and let's start the discussion today, and it continues into tomorrow's daf, well into tomorrow's daf. The discussion of the Gemara starts over here in the following place. Bishlam Alinyan Tuma Bahapligi. The question of whether or not our wick that was made up of a beged, that we folded over. So is it mekabel tuma or is it not mekabel tuma? So the Gemara says, I understand that machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer Savar Kipol Einu Moel. Rabbi Eliezer is of the following position. This was a garment. It was used and now it's going to be recycled and made into a wick. It's going to be folded over. Rabbi Eliezer says the process of folding over does not make a significant change in the beged. It still is a beged. It's just simply folded over. Uva milsa kamaisi kaime. And it still retains its original status. And so therefore, it's mekabel tuma because it's a beged. And Rabbi Kiva savar kipol moel uva tule batel. Rabbi Kiva says the act of folding is considered significant. So even though it was a beged, but by virtue of the fact now that I folded it over, I've taken off the shame beged, and I give it the designation as a psila. Now that it's no longer a shame beged, so it's no longer mekabel tumah. Good. So whether or not folding it is going to change its status or not change its status, moving it from the status of what it once was, which was a beged, which obviously is mekabel tumah, to now a non-beged entity, which is not mekabel tumah, so the machlokas, hatanaim, is very easily understood. Is folding enough of a process in which it's going to be able to change its status? The Gemara says it's fine, and I understand that. Ela le'inyan hadlaka b'may pligi. But they're also having a debate in terms of whether or not we could use it to light for our Friday night light. The Gemara says there, I don't understand. What's the issue? So the Gemara is going to give an interesting and a little bit complicated explanation in terms of what the debate is over here. Amar Rebbe Lazar, Amar Rebbe Yoshi, V'chein Amar Rebbe Ada Ba'ava, Hacha B'gimel Agimel Metzum Samos Askinan. So the Gemara's first explanation goes like this. The fabric over here was exactly 3x3. As we already discussed the last number of days, in order for a beged to be mekabel tumah, so it has to be a minimum size. And the minimum size, as we described earlier, was a garment that's 3x3. Now remember, we made a distinction between 3x3 inches versus 3x3 tefachim. 3x3 inches, so there, only to be used by aniyim. 3x3 tefachim to be used by both aniyim and ashirim. So let's assume right now that we are talking about the base minimum of 3x3 etzbaos. So it's a very small swatch of fabric. But it's exactly 3x3. Now it happens to be that our Mishnah is describing a very specific scenario. Notably, it is Friday, but Friday also happens to be Yontif as well. And so therefore, what? So the Gemara says like this. We're going to assume we're going to follow Rav Yehuda's position. Rav Yehuda's position is that on Yontif, obviously you're allowed to burn on Yontif. There are a number of malachas that are allowed on Yontif for the purposes of Ochel Nefesh. And so therefore, if you have wood that you prepared before Yontif, so obviously you could use that wood for the fire. But according to Rav Yehuda, let's say you had a bench or anything made out of wood, any kli that was made out of wood, and it broke on Yontif. Now, if it breaks on Yontif, so now these pieces, which were once part of a kli, are called in halacha shivrei kelim, broken pieces. But on Yontif, according to Rav Yehuda, they also have another status as well. And that's the status of nolad, meaning that these pieces were not the intention of these pieces going into Yontif. Going into Yontif, it was a bench. It was meant to be sat on. But now that it breaks on Yontif, and now I want to recycle these pieces to be used as, let's say, fuel for the fire. So according to Rav Yehuda, you cannot do that. Because this is what in halacha is referred to as muktza, because it wasn't designated this way going into Yontif, and therefore you cannot use it for fuel for the fire. And so we're going to assume, like Rav Yehuda, that when you have shivrei kelim that broke on Yontif, they have the muktza designation. And the Gemara says, and we're also going to assume like Ula. What did Ula say? We learned it earlier in the Masechta. We get to review right now. That when you're lighting, you need to light, making sure that the fire really catches well on the wick before you remove your hand. And now, Rebbe Elazar Savar Kipol Eino Moel. So now Rebbe Elazar is of the following position. Here we have a beged. Now we folded the beged. Now as we already learned together, according to Rebbe Eliezer, folding it, and you folded it before Yontif. But folding it doesn't change anything, according to Rebbe Eliezer. V'kev in da'adlik be'porta havile shever kli. Now, you started, let's just picture, on Friday afternoon, which also happens to be Yontif, you started lighting this beged. But now remember, we are subscribing to two positions. One, Rav Yehuda, that nolad is muktzah and you can't use nolad on Yontif. And two, we're also subscribing to the rule of Ula, which is that when you light a flame on Yontif and on for the Shabbos licht, you have to make sure that it catches really well. So over here, imagine it's exactly 3x3. And now I lit it. So by lighting it now, you have taken off from the shear to less than 3x3. What you've created now on Yontif is a shever kli, V'chi kamadlik b'shever kli kamadlik. And now what you're lighting is, you're lighting a shever kli. And that is why you cannot do so, because now you created the shever kli on yantiv. You're making usage of the shever kli on yantiv. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer bans that activity. Mashenkin, according to Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva serve a kipa moel. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that by virtue of the fact you folded it before yantiv. So what have you done before yantiv? You've now taken it away from the beged status. You've given it now a new purpose going into yantiv. The folding process, according to Rabbi Akiva, is significant. So now it's viewed as a functional wick. And so now using it on yantiv for Shabbos would be perfectly legitimate. So kipo moel vein tors kli alav v'chi kamalik be'etz ba'ama kamalik. And now basically what you're doing is you're lighting an eitz, meaning it's a wick. And this now is the Gemara's proposed explanation of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva in terms of whether or not you could use such a wick on for your Friday night lecht. Again, it's a complicated explanation. First, it's an ukimta. We're talking about a Friday afternoon that coincides with yantiv, so that Friday is yantiv. And then we're subscribing to the principle of nolad and Ula's principle that when you light, you have to make sure that the wick catches well before you get to remove your hand. And with that stated, so it comes back now to the discussion. I'm just recapping. I'm reviewing. It comes back now to, according to Rabbi Eliezer, because folding for him is a non-significant event, so therefore it's still a beged going into yantiv. And therefore, and it's exactly 3x3, in terms of its measurement. And so when you first light it, you're taking it from being a beged to a non-beged entity. And so therefore you have given it the status of shivrei kelim on yantiv, which is muktzah, which is nolad. And now making usage of it is going to be banned because we subscribe to Rabbi Yehuda that one is not allowed to burn with shivrei kelim on yantiv. Masha'enkin, according to Rabbi Akiva, that by virtue of the fact that you folded it before yantiv, you have now removed the beged status of it before yantiv. Now by lighting it on yantiv, what you're doing is you're lighting something on yantiv that was prepared for lighting, i.e. you folded it before yantiv, and therefore you've rendered it a wick going into yantiv. I'm Rav Yosef, and we're just going to finish up over here by reading the last lines of the Amud. I'm Rav Yosef, Haina de Tanina, Gimel Gimel Mitzum Samos. Rav Yosef says, you know, I've been hearing this expression, Gimel Gimel Mitzum Samos, V'lo Yadin L'may Hilchasa, and I didn't understand it. And now that I've heard this explanation within the sheet of Rav Yehuda, now I understand what exactly we meant when we said Gimel or Gimel Mitzum Samos. Meaning it was the ukimta that we gave in our Mishnah in order to explain the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. First, most of today's daf today was dedicated to the topic of Tumas Ohel, and vis-a-vis the Pishtan, which is going to not only be a conductor of Tumas Ohel Ameis, but it also is going to be Mekabel Tumas Ohel Ameis, even if, we saw Tosfos in the beginning of the daf today, even if the linen tent is pitched into the ground, still, the linen covering is going to be not only a conductor of the Tumas Ohel, but also Mekabel Tumas Ohel. And then the discussion over the course of today is, from where do we know this? How do I know this? And we learned it based on Gzeira Shava, based on the construction of the Mishkan, and it afforded us the opportunity today to look deeper into the construction of the Mishkan, the coverings of the Mishkan, and we discussed the Tachash, kosher animal, non-kosher animal. We discussed the halachas of the hide of a non-kosher animal. Is it susceptible to Tumah? The conclusion of the Gemara today's daf was yes, it is susceptible to Tumah. It's susceptible to Tumas Nega, Tumas Shratzim, and Tumas Ohel Hameis. How do we get to the Tumas Ohel Hameis? That was a complex route, but we got there. And that was the Gemara's conclusion. We revisited the topic of the Tachash, obviously a fascinating animal, but one we know very little about. And the Gemara just gave us little snippets of information regarding the Tachash animal. And then we finally concluded today's daf with the discussion of the wick that was made up of a beged and whether or not that wick can be used for your for lighting Shabbos Lecht. A machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, and the Gemara has so far offered one explanation of how to understand that machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva.